All right, welcome everyone. It's Friday night here in America, Saturday morning in Ireland, Scotland, and the UK, and elsewhere in Europe. Welcome, everybody. I'm Stephen Robertson. This is Cancel the Cabal. I have a very special guest up on tonight. It is his second appearance. Daniel Johnson of People Against the NDAA. I'll read a little bit here. Signed on December 31st, 2011, when everybody was preoccupied with New Year's Eve and that, the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act has been largely ignored by the mainstream media sources. It received a whopping 2 mentions on primetime CNN coverage, 45 seconds on Fox News, and 30 minutes from MSNBC. Comedy Central had a larger segment on the NDAA than most of these networks combined, but anyways, as the event page mentioned, it's been largely ignored, and it has been a thorn in the back of my tonight's guest. I want to welcome Dan Johnson to the show. Welcome back. I should say welcome back, Dan.
Thanks for having me back on, Stephen.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yeah, the reason you contacted me and asked for a little bit of time was you're having a very, very special event coming up, or quite a few special events. Why don't we go ahead and talk about that for a few minutes, and then I can run a little YouTube clip that your organization made up, and it might help explain a little bit.
Sure. I mean, we can run the YouTube clip first, and then I can go into a little bit more detail so we can give people a basis to look at.
Okay, that's fine. I'll just go ahead and do that right now then. We do need to mute because it's a YouTube, and my system won't allow us to talk, but here we go, everyone.
Just something Congress passes and we're going to fund the military. Well, this year they went, okay, let's add 2 anti-terrorism provisions. Now, basically what the anti-terrorism provisions say is we now have the ability to arrest anyone, whether an American citizen or not, if they're quote-unquote a suspected terrorist.
The act is such an abomination that even the intelligence agencies most responsible for combating terrorism felt that this frightening overreach of power was not necessary to keep Americans safe.
I have a question about the National Defense Act of 2012. There's been a lot of debate that it allows for indefinite detention of terror suspects.
Defense Authorization Act, signed into law December 31st, 2011.
It's the indefinite detention without due process, without habeas corpus of our own citizens.
Terms which are used in this act are open and ambiguous to interpretation.
Now, I'm going to tell you, the laws of war do not and cannot coexist with our Bill of Rights. It's not possible.
If you could talk to James Madison, how would you explain to him that terrorism is not a guise in which lawlessness and oppression has come to this land?
If Congress cannot correct errors that they've made, then the people can come back and have redress with their local government.
Massachusetts Division of PANDA.
PANDA is a national nonpartisan grassroots organization founded in late January 2012.
In 70 chapters and about 30 states nationwide.
It's insidious to deem every American citizen or American person or individual who has a love for this country and the precepts that was conceived under a terrorist.
Is a baseball stadium more important than liberty? Are liquor licenses more important than due process?
It's another example, and I keep finding new ones all the time, of bringing people together.
It's not a partisan fight. It's a fight of principle. It's a fight that we dare not lose.
Should be standing, and why do we back down at the critical moment?
The knowledge is starts to grow. Make a YouTube video. Make a YouTube video.
Okay, I guess that video shuts off a few seconds early there. Are you back there, Dan? You are muted.
That would be a problem.
There you go.
I'm back. I'm here, and I'm ready to roll.
Okay, yeah. I've actually popped the link to the YouTube video part of your page, and I'll go get that page now, and then... put that link in the two chat rooms, but sure, let's go ahead and talk about this tour and what it's going to mean for you, your organization, and your all of these bands possibly.
Yeah, and I apologize to our to the people listening on the radio that that is a video and usually designed for viewing, kind of hard to tell exactly what's going on if you're just on audio. But as you mentioned, my name's Dan Johnson. I'm the founder and national director of PANDA, People Against the NDAA. And our strategy approaching the NDAA, go into the NDAA for just a second. For those of you who do not know what the NDAA is, it stands for the National Defense Authorization Act. This piece of legislation was signed by the president December 31st, 2011, and essentially authorizes the military to indefinitely detain any person they consider a threat or a suspected terrorist, put them in jail, detain them without a charge, without a trial, send them to a foreign country, or execute them with a drone strike, all on U.S. soil or anywhere in the world. So, in a nutshell, it is the most single most dangerous law passed by Congress. And we have a three-phase strategy with defeating the NDAA as a movement, as an NDAA resistance movement. The three phases are to, number one, pass a law making it illegal in that city or in that county as we go from a local level. Number two is to get the police department or the sheriff's department of that locality behind the resolution to say no to the NDAA. We will uphold our oath to the Constitution. We will not allow the NDAA to be utilized in our jurisdiction. And number three is to help people set up a neighborhood watch in their county and in their city. And with this neighborhood watch, to really keep an eye on the local government, keep an eye on their local law enforcement. This third phase is ultimately what is going to ensure the NDAA is defeated on a local level. And this third phase is where we in America have issues, to say the least, because the people in this country don't remember as clearly as they should the Japanese-American detention in World War II and what that brought about and how America would and could and has used this power in the past. So we're launching the Take Back Concert Tour. A Take Back Concert Tour is a extremely, extremely exciting tour that's going to have drop off or go into three locations. We're going to launch it in a little bit over. The first location is going to be April 19th in Kalamazoo, Michigan at Western Michigan University. We're launching that in, or we're doing that in a little bit over a month. But the purpose of the Take Back Tour is to change the music that we have in our nation. You know, in the 60s, Woodstock, in that time, music changed the culture. Music created the anti-war movement, or if it did not create it, it furthered the anti-war movement to a huge extent.
It fueled it, too.
Go ahead.
It fueled it.
It definitely fueled it. And it that music changed the culture, literally. And so if we take the same concept and we apply it to the NDAA, we apply it to indefinite detention, and we put on three concerts to literally light up the sky, literally take back, help people take back their cities, but ingrain us in culture. You know, former Congressman Ron Paul, like him or hate him, former Congressman Ron Paul said that if you're going to need, if you're going to have a revolution, you're going to need two things. You're going to need young people, and you're going to need music. Love him or hate him, for the oldest candidate in the race in 2012, he had more young people following him than any other candidate.
Yes,
he knows what he's talking about.
Yes, he did.
And so with the Panda Take Back concert tour, we have invited artists like Immortal Technique, like Korn, like artists all across the political spectrum who have a interest in either preserving our liberty, preserving our freedom, or just want to get a younger generation active or get the message of liberty out to a younger generation. And we're going to start there and slowly and but surely move and get up more artists and more artists and more artists, and you change the music dynamic. You change the music culture. So the Take Back Concert Tour, the goal is to solidify that third principle, to ensure that that third principle, which is to change, to get a neighborhood watch of people and to have people watching over their own government. You know, the reason we're in the situation we're in today is because for far too long during the baby boomer era, for far too long, we let our government go. There was an idea amongst the baby boomer era that was, well, if you see a politician, hello, Mr. Congressman, how are you? Very polite, not really keep an eye on them. That's politics. Let the politicians take care of it. That idea had kind of festered in America. And really, that kind of, let's just let the bad guys take care of our money and our liberties, that idea did not work. And that idea led us to where we are today, which is we have laws that now legally allow the government to assassinate its own citizens, to detain its own citizens. And so the reason that we are launching this Take Back Concert Tour is we want to literally change the culture back to liberty. And the way you do that is you change the culture of the youth. You change the culture of people of my generation. And you show people of my generation, liberty is the way to go. And that is the purpose behind the Take Back Concert Tour. That's why we're very, very excited about it. And we have right now online, and I think you're going to post it in the chat rooms and in the Facebook group. But we have online right now, we've launched a fundraiser for the Take Back Concert Tour. Now, this fundraiser is just to get us off the ground, to get us moving. By Monday, we need to raise $5,000. So we are moving and we are pushing this fundraiser. This is the first time I'm going to be announcing the new wave, as it were, of fundraising. We have 715 that I know of up there for now. And we are pushing the grassroots. Do you want the youth to stand up and say enough? If you out there listening to this broadcast, if you want a chance to get to the younger generation, to get to the people like myself, to get to our generation and get them to stand up and to say enough, this is our chance. It's the first Liberty Concert Tour that I know of since 9/11, going to multiple places. We're going to have 3,200, 3,000 people-ish per event. This has a chance of literally, and these are not just activists. These are people who are coming to hear their artist. They're people who are coming to for music. These are not people who are really in the movement. That's not the goal of this. The goal is to get people who aren't in this, who don't really understand, but could understand if they were shown the truth and shown what's really going on in this country. This is the chance to take the Take Back concert tour and to take the music to the youth of this generation. That's why I'm so excited about it, is because it's my generation that is now, we're going to reach out to them in the language they know. So this is a huge opportunity. This is the first opportunity really presented to the Liberty Movement in the form of a tour, in the form of, we're going to have a concert going all across the country now, where, or at least all across the eastern seaboard or eastern side of the country, where we have a chance to bring young people together who aren't activists, who aren't really active, aren't really paying any attention. And in three fun-filled nights, in three awesome nights, having some of the best artists in the world and best activist artists in the world come to play at these events, get the young people to say enough, and this is how we do it, and this is the opportunity we have.
Oh, yes, absolutely it is. I was growing up very, very young in the late 60s, early 70s, with the anti-Vietnam War music, and that a lot of what I grew up listening to back in them days, there was just the AM station. They didn't have FM back then, but you would hear a folk song, and then the station would turn around and play a country song, and then they would turn right around and play a blues or a soul song. So they had all of the genre was on one particular station, you know, or one particular platform, if you want. Not like today, where you can turn the station and find whatever genre you want. But yeah, there were quite a few people that made a very good living on the anti-war music, and it's really been a shame the last 5 years since Barack Obama took office that there hasn't been a lot of anti-war music out there. I wonder if that is by choice or by, you know, whatever the reason is. There just hasn't been a whole lot of anti-war anything. It's all been pro-war. But it seems when George Bush was in office, there was a lot of anti-war propaganda, anti-war rhetoric, if you want to call it. But there just seems to be missing here in the last 5 years.
It is definitely toned down, at least a little bit on the music side of things. But I think the effects are still there of the 60s and the 70s anti-war music, because we stopped the war in Syria.
Yes, we did, yes.
I mean, when's the last time that happened? When's the last time America announced they were going to war, and then people went, no, and then America listened?
Exactly. And then he also threatened to go behind Congress's back and do it anyways, and that was put to stop, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it got away with it in Libya, and him and Bush got away with Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Ecuador. I mean, all these different places that we sent military troops to got away with it.
North Africa,
but this time they didn't.
Yes, they did. Well, I think that they caught the signals just in time, because they knew once after Syria was going to be Iran, and then soon after that probably would have been Russia within 10 years or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, all world powers have always struggled to take control of the world, and the United States is no different.
No, not at all. Maybe go into a little bit of the intricacies of the NDAA. You happen to mention that at any time, the Army or other corporate entities involved with the Army can probably help out, but what can they actually do and when?
As far as the NDAA is concerned, the important thing to keep in mind about the NDAA is it stands for the National Defense Authorization Act. So this is a bill that typically funded the military, typically every couple years, and it eventually became every 1 year. they would pass a massive NDAA to fund the military. And there were little things sneaked in there a lot of the time that just gave the military a little bit more authority, gave the military a little bit more authority. For example, 1981, the NDAA actually gave National Guard the authority to participate in some limited anti-drug activity. 2004 NDAA created anti-drug units of the National Guard. The 2008 NDAA created the Council of Governors, and the Council of Governors is 10 governors from the each of the 10 federal emergency management regions, and those governors would then come together and determine, one of their goals was to determine how to use the military on U.S. soil. So when it comes to the 2012 NDAA, this is something that's been building up, little by little by little. Something that's been building up. Now we have the 2012 NDAA, and the 2012 NDAA essentially authorizes the laws of war to be applied to any person here in the United States or any American citizen anywhere in the world. When you apply the laws of war to someone and you treat them as an unprivileged enemy belligerent, which is what this law does, what you are saying is this person neither has any protections under the Geneva Conventions and their national laws of war, or has any protections under the Constitution. They're just considered protectionless under both international and U.S. law. So you name people unprivileged enemy belligerents, and then the military can do absolutely anything it wants. Execution, torture, detention. Remember, if you're familiar with kind of the police response in Watertown?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And Pittsburgh, 2009,
G20. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Pittsburgh may have been mostly police, but Watertown, Massachusetts, there was, according to the Atlantic Wire, Watertown, Massachusetts was being run by the military, and the law enforcement was assisting them.
You're referring to the Boston bombing, right?
I'm referring to the Boston Marathon bombing.
Okay.
So Boston Marathon bombing, Boston, Massachusetts PD, all these different police departments, Homeland Security, federal government, they were all assisting the military, locking down Watertown, Massachusetts. The military has control. That is what's known as martial law, military rule. And so the military has control over Watertown, Massachusetts. And then on top of the military having control over Watertown, Massachusetts, to as further proof that, that they considered Watertown a battlefield at the time, Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, who was the suspected Boston bomber, Dzhokhar Tsarnaev was charged with operating a weapon of mass destruction. Now, a weapon of mass destruction used to be nuclear, biological, and chemical. Those three. However, apparently now, what they say he used
slow cookers.
Was pressure cookers and ball bearings.
Right.
Well, if you use pressure cookers and ball bearings, that does not fall under a weapon of mass destruction unless he's on a battlefield. If he's on a battlefield, he can be charged with operating a weapon of mass destruction. If he's not on a battlefield, he can't. Which means when they charge him with operating a weapon of mass destruction, they considered Watertown, Massachusetts a battlefield. Imagine your backyard getting turned into Baghdad. That is what Watertown, Massachusetts looked like when the police and military took over. And this is something the NDAA authorizes. I mean, you've seen the police militarization in this country.
Sure.
It's going from, you know, you've seen the number of SWAT raids, wrong door SWAT raids, spike to, I believe, over 3,000 a year. Wrong door. Like, we accidentally showed up at the wrong door and shot your dog. Wrong door SWAT raids, and kind of chuck funny, but they're literally walking in, they're shooting the animals, they're scaring the living daylights out of the wrong people. If that is as a result of bringing militarized police into the police forces, then what happens when you go full military? What happens when instead of going halfway and crossing this bridge between the police and the military, which is what a special weapons and tactics or SWAT team is for? What if you go full military? What if you go all the way? Imagine what kind of rights violations you have there. As a great example, Almost every time an American citizen ends up in a military court, they are detained indefinitely or executed. Military courts are not friendly toward rights, toward liberties, to someone who is considered an unprivileged enemy belligerent, which is what you and I are considered in the in America, as America is a battlefield under the NDAA.
Yes, absolutely. They are soon going to be calling us, I know we mentioned this on the first show, they're soon going to be calling us terrorist. They're going to be calling us anarchist, along with a few other choice adjectives that are falsely going to be used. They need justification, and they will look for it however they can get it.
I agree. And they'll always pick a group to demonize. See, one thing a lot of people don't remember about the Japanese-American detention in World War II was the Japanese-American detention was not the only time that the media went after the Japanese. The Japanese, for the couple years before their detention, were lambasted. They were told, oh, the Japanese are stealing our agriculture. They're stealing our land. They're subverting our culture. They're turning our culture into savages. And all this propaganda was going against the Japanese because the government, in order for it to make you afraid, it has to target a certain group of people. It has to say, those people are dangerous. And you should not let those people have rights. So the government to take yours as well. And this is what happened to the Japanese Americans, is they were lambasted, they were gone after, and American people were so propagandized that when the Japanese Americans were detained, there wasn't an outcry. Well, what do we have today? We have people in the Middle East, whether Muslim or not, we have people in the Middle East being targeted as, here's your enemy. I believe Mike Huckabee on Fox News said that they were nothing more than uncorked animals. The government tries to demonize this certain group of people, and if they can convince you that this certain group of people does not deserve rights, then they will be able to convince you that no one deserves, they will be able to make it so no one deserves rights. Give me an example. Guantanamo Bay. I was asked a question at a meeting that I was presenting at. I told everybody how much of a terrorist they were because of all these different documents that the government considers them a terrorist. And eventually at the end, one of the people went up to me and or they asked a question, raised their hand in the audience and said, hey, isn't it funny that Obama calls all of us terrorists, yet he's not going out. He wants to give the real terrorists in Guantanamo Bay a civilian trial. And my answer to that is if you agree that rights, privileges and the protections of those rights can be taken from a certain group of people, all the government has to do is take that definition and apply it to you.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a statement. I think it's, well, it was a question in the one chat room. Angie asks, so are the whites going to be the new Japanese? And I kind of responded to her, yes, in a way, but not so much white, but just patriotic people.
Anyone who challenges that, there are two groups of people who I would say will be targeted by the government. The first group is anyone who the government wants to persecute. We had the American Indians back during the Trail of Tears. We had the Japanese Americans. We had the Irish Catholics. Anyone the government deems someone they want to persecute, someone they want to go after, if they see a resource in that country that they need, they'll go after that. So anyone the government chooses to wants to demonize, which at current time is say Muslim Americans, anyone the government wants to demonize, number one. And number two, anyone who dares challenge the government's power. Now, it's important to understand that with the NDAA, we have a cooling down period. Every law, especially a law that pushes the boundaries, has a cool down period. What this cool down period is for is it's not necessarily legal, but it's kind of an unwritten rule. A cool down period is the law is put in place, but it's not utilized. It's not used to its full extent. It sometimes, in some cases, is not even used. And after the American people forget about it, or after there's not enough opposition to it, then the law begins to be implemented. It begins to be used against certain people. They start with easy people to use it against, and they move toward a complete and utter tyranny. And right now, for the 2012 NDAA, we have a cooldown period. We are in the cooldown period. Thanks to the efforts of PANDA and many other organizations and many of the groups, many of their movements, which we overall call the NDAA resistance. So thanks to the efforts of the NDAA resistance, we have right now a extended cooldown period because the issue has been kept to the forefront. The issue has been out there in front of people. Cities are passing resolutions against the NDAA, banning it from happening in their jurisdiction. We had just had the first county in America. I'll talk about that a little later if we have time. First county in America on Monday banned the NDAA from it completely. That is keeping it in the public spotlight. It's keeping it in the public eye. That is important, that it stay in the public eye in order for us to successfully navigate this cooldown period and ensure the cooldown period stays until we defeat the law. So right now is the best chance to now defeat this. Right now is the best chance to be able to take action. Right now is the best chance to change the culture against it. Because if we can keep this in the public spotlight, and that's what music does. If somebody produces a music track, it's going to be played over and over and over and over and over again for years to come. And on this, at the Take Back concert tour, we're having over 7 artists are producing music just for the tour, just for the NDAA. Getting that concept over and over and over again into people's minds is crucial and really, really important. So right now we're in the cool down period, and right now we have a chance to defeat it, but the cooldown period will only last as long as we force it to by forcing the issue into the public eye and continuing activism against it.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's another listener, Ron. She's also the host that I had just finished producing for before I brought you up, Dan. Jill said music speaks to the soul, and the right message, as we happen to mention in the Vietnam War music, it reached the soul of millions of people and turned them against the Vietnam War. I would like you to talk about this community before we talk about the music. Maybe you happen to mention that there was a community that. What did they do? Pass some local legislation to keep federal agencies out? Or
so from the very beginning, PANDA has worked at a state and local level, mostly a state level at first, and we eventually moved to the local level because, to be honest, the state legislatures are just as corrupt as D.C., if not more. And
really? Wow.
As we started to move on a local level, we decentralized the organization. The organization kind of exists, like there's 15 or so of us. But the movement now, the NDAA resistance, has blossomed out of that. Yesterday alone, I think I spent maybe 3 or 4 hours training 8 or 9 different people and helping them answering questions for their district and getting them going and helping them out. So the resistance has exploded. But the goal of the resistance is to pull bricks out of the bottom of the pyramid of corruption so you take it down from the bottom up. Imagine the powers of the NDAA or the government corruption itself as a pyramid. You have the money at the top, follow the money, whatever you want to call the money, banking clan, special interest, lobbyists, whatever. Follow the money, and then just into that you have the federal government, then you have the state government, then you have the local government, then you have the people. Now, if you're going to dismantle that pyramid, you don't go to the top and knock somebody off. You don't go to the top and knock, say, the president off. I mean, what happens if you impeach the president? Somebody walks up and places a new president on top. They walk up the pyramid, put a new top on. Great example, Egypt. In Egypt, they got rid of Hosni Mubarak. Hosni Mubarak was an extreme dictator. They got rid of him. And then who did they get? Mohamed Morsi. So what did they do? Went back to the top, got rid of Mohamed Morsi. So who did they get?
That's
General
right.
Al-Sisi. This is going to keep going until they realize you cannot go from the top to the bottom. You have to go from the bottom to the top, or you will not affect any meaningful change.
Yes.
If they had gotten the Council of Governors, or if they had gotten the governors and the provincial governors, and they had knocked them out of office first and then gone after Morsi, you would see real change. You would see real reform. Instead, you have a general who literally was the general for the other two dictators, not exactly outside the inner circle. And now he's running the country. So our goal has always been to take the bricks from the bottom of that pyramid. You take brick by brick by brick by brick by brick by brick out of the bottom of that pyramid, and eventually that pyramid collapses. What we've done on a local level since launching the Take Back campaign is we have, like I talked about strategy in the very beginning, gotten cities to ban, to prohibit anyone from using the powers under the NDAA, whether they claim the powers under the Constitution, whether they claim the powers under the AUMF. You cannot use military and the laws of war on citizens or people who aren't in the military in this country. And when we launched that campaign, when we really decided to push on a local level, first city in America to defeat the NDAA is also the second stop on the Take Back concert tour. Albany, New York. Albany, New York, October 7th, 2013, banned the NDAA, prohibited it completely. We actually had a live band there for the vote. That was kind of fun. But after Albany, Oxford, Webster, both in Massachusetts, Emmett, Idaho, and then 3 days ago or 4 days ago on Monday, Gem County, Idaho, the first county in the nation to say no, prohibit, ban the laws of war, ban the NDAA from being utilized in their county. They just finished doing that on Monday. With now we've got about 15 cities and counties in Idaho alone, about 70 or 80 across the nation that are currently considering doing just what Gem County, Idaho did. But Gem County, Idaho has taken and banned and prohibited the NDAA, whether it's a federal, state, local, international agent, your mother down the street. Nobody can use the laws of war in Gem County, Idaho. They're banned and prohibited by the legislation they passed on Monday.
Okay, so they made a law in their own local community.
Absolutely, and the police and the sheriff, the sheriff specifically since it's the county,
yes,
swore to uphold that. And we are going to work with the sheriff to put it into his official departmental policy so that if he breaks that, he can be double prosecuted, not just for breaking the law, but also for breaking his own policy.
Somebody would like to know, well, I think you might have just mentioned it, but what did the law say? What did the legislation say?
So the restoring constitutional governance resolution, or RCGR, which if you go on our website, pandaunite.org, and you look under resources, you'll find sample legislation. Click on that, get legislation for your county and city. You'll be able to grab this piece of legislation. But the RCGR, and I'm not going to read it word for word because it will bore everybody to death. If you want to find the actual language, it's on the website. But the general consensus is Gem County is not a battlefield, number one. Number two, the Supreme Court has ruled that Congress nor the president can authorize the laws of war to be applied to someone outside the military in the United States. And basically, notwithstanding any law, treaty, authority, claimed authority, we're saying basically even if you claim, like the Bush administration claimed they could detain American citizens under the authorization for use of military force, number one, and in Hamdi v. Rumsfeld, under the Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, they claim that. We're basically saying, we don't care if you claim the authority, right? Put down the authority into law, write down the authority on a napkin. You can't use this authority in Gem County. And this authority is A, to arrest or capture any person in Gem County or a citizen of Gem County anywhere in the United States with intent of detention under the law of war. B, actually subject a person in Gem County to disposition under the law of war. Or C, actually subject any person in Gem County or a citizen of Gem County within the United States to targeted killing. And then we're going to send this resolution to our state legislature, our congressional delegation, and the sheriff for enforcement.
Oh, yes. Well, as many of us know, the sheriff is actually the chief law enforcement officer in any county. I don't know if I happened to mention the last time or not, Dan, but I had a local sheriff from around my area about 30 miles away on the show back in October, I think it was. And he happened to repel the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, from his county by using his authority of the county sheriff. He told them to beat it because they were harassing a Amish farmer over raw milk. Somebody had bought some raw milk and transported it across the state lines, and the FDA come in and tried busting him, and this sheriff told them to get out of town, otherwise he was going to arrest them.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I think all communities should try to educate their sheriffs, because they are the first in line as far as if a federal agency tries to come into an area. They have to come in and talk to a sheriff first, and then their local police.
Well, sheriff, local police, they have to confer with local law enforcement. Yeah, and the fact is there's a reason the sheriff's elected. There's a reason that real peace officers, constitutionally authorized peace officers, are elected.
Their accountability.
Because if they're accountable to the people.
Yep.
If they trample on the people's rights, they are in trouble. And yet today we have police departments where a man named James Avicedo, the chief of Austin Police, can say after they arrest a jaywalker in a new initiative to stop people from jaywalking in the city because it's such a danger to everyone around them. And the new initiatives to stop jaywalking, they arrest a jaywalker at the press conference where everybody is rightly upset at them for arresting a jaywalker and sending them to prison. He says, thank God, I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, thank God that we only arrested a jaywalker. In other cities, there are cops sexually assaulting people, which in layman's terms essentially means, well, at least we didn't rape you. And that is the state of police, that is police brutality and the police mentality in the United States. You don't see as much of that. When you see some, you don't see as much of that with the sheriff.
Yes.
Because the sheriff is elected and is accountable to the people. And that is why you get sheriffs behind stuff like this and you get your local law enforcement behind stuff like this, because they're accountable to you. If, you know, let's say they repeal the NDAA at the federal level. Obviously, they wanted this power for a reason, right? Obviously, they've been working with this power and utilizing this power even before the NDAA. So let's say you repeal only the NDAA, not the laws of war. Let's say you repeal the NDAA at a federal level. What have you done? I mean, yeah, kind of you got the language out of the way, but what happens when a federal agent is ordered to go detain someone in your city under the AUMF or under the laws of war? They're ordered to go detain someone in your city, and they don't have to go home at night to face the citizens of your city. Your police officers do. Your sheriff does.
Yes, they do.
And that's why you get your local law enforcement. That's why we go to local level. You get your local law enforcement to back this, because they're the ones who are going to be ultimately responsible for the protection of your rights. They're also the ones who you're going to see in the grocery store. They're also the ones you're going to see in your neighborhood. And if they allowed the military to come into Gem County now and go detain someone, and then went back to their home in Gem County and tried to live in Gem County, how are they going to live with all those citizens just angry at them? They're not going to be able to keep their job.
They're going to live in paranoia. That's how they're going to live.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Yeah. How did you or somebody on in your group get the idea to go to the local communities and get them to pass laws? How'd you get that idea?
Well, that idea came around toward the beginning of the organization, and we basically set it up so that I looked at DC and I went, they're not doing anything. The Washington, D.C. is not there for us. It's very obvious they're not. They're a center of power. And I figured we'd go to the state level, and we try the local level as well as the state level for a little while. And eventually the consensus was, and the idea was back in early last year, mid last year rather, that we're going to have to do this on a local level, and it's actually going to be better to do it on a local level. So PANDA's really never worked nationally. I've been to DC and lobbied once, but that was because the opportunity came across. We've never worked, we never tried to push, we've never really done anything nationally. We have focused specific on the local, specific on the state level, to get those governments to say, no, enough, we've had enough of this, and to start the process of local government saying no when the federal government says yes. And who does the federal government derive its power from? Those local governments that it has to eventually, if enough of them do something like people are doing right now, it has to eventually listen to them.
Oh, yes, it does. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you want to end this just a few minutes early. You know, I can give you the platform for the next 3 or 4 minutes if you'd like.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that it's important for a couple things. I think I would say to kind of close out. First of all, thanks everyone for listening in and tuning into this this broadcast, even though the video wasn't optimized for radio at the very beginning. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and thank you guys for getting behind the idea of the NDAA resistance and being part of that NDAA resistance out there. And if I had to kind of summarize everything and then kind of leave with a few points, one of the points I would leave everyone with is power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That quote has an ending that most people don't know. The ending that is, and all men are, I'm going to paraphrase here, or there it is right there. It is, all good men are bad men. Now, this is a curious ending to a quote by someone the Founding Fathers looked up to quite a bit, Lord Acton. And what it means is not necessarily that everyone is a bad person, but it is driving home the point, power itself corrupts. I have watched organizations get co-opted. I've watched many organizations fall to the lust and the lure of power. And that's why we decentralized. That's why we got rid of all the power, as much of the power as we could possibly get rid of and still be effective. That's why we got rid of our teams. We got rid of our chapters. They're still working. They're still doing stuff on the NDAA and fighting it. But they're not directly under us. They're not directly under our authority. We've gotten rid of that power because power has such a potential to corrupt. People ask me, well, will you ever run for office? I'd love to vote for you. It's like, oh, hey, you want to vote for me, so I'll steal from you. I don't get that. But beyond that, I, as someone in office right now, would become just as corrupt and just as twisted as every other person at whatever level of office I went into. It has nothing to do with the integrity. It has nothing to do with the liberty-minded ideals. It has nothing to do with what you think you're going to do when you get in office. It has to do with the power that office allows you. And so if I were to end on a couple points, one of those points would be, power corrupts. Kicking people out is not going to change things because the power is still there. Doesn't matter who they are. Doesn't matter what they believe. Good people go to Washington. Good people go to Columbus. Good people go to Lansing. And trash comes out.
Yes, they do.
Power corrupts.
Absolutely.
And secondly, I would say... first of all, thank you for having me on the show again, Steven.
Oh, you're welcome.
It was great to be on.
You're welcome.
And if you really believe in this vision, if you believe in the vision that I've put forth in front of you, and you want to get a PANDA t-shirt, you want to just get a shout out on the Facebook page, or you want to give of even your time to this Take Back Tour And whether you want to donate toward a good cause and invest your money in the younger generation, or you want to invest your time in the younger generation, this is an initiative that I'm throwing everything I have behind, I'm throwing my whole heart into, because I believe it could be a success. And if you believe it, you can go to either pandaunite.org. Go there, hit the contact us link, and volunteer. Put your time and your effort toward making this thing a success. Or also pandaunite.org. And I believe you have the link in your chat room to the fundraising campaign to put a little bit of an investment forth in the next generation so that we can have freedom again in this country. That's why I'm so excited about it. That's why I'm pushing this so hard. So I'd ask all your listeners to either go to pandaunite.org, and either if you believe in this vision, if you don't believe in this vision, don't bother. If you believe in this vision, if you believe in what I've set forth, go to pandaunite.org, pandaunite.org. Check out the fundraising campaign and see if you are willing to volunteer your time, contact us, and help kick this tour off the ground.
Yes, I want to actually try to go ahead and there are many, many listeners that don't sign into the chat, so they don't see the chat, Dan, but the link for the video, the Take Back Concert Tour video, is www.indiegogo.com. That's indiegogo.com/projects/panda-take-back-concert-tour. I know that's quite a long
just be easier to go to indiegogo.com, indiegogo.com. Just type in Take Back Concert Tour, it'll take you right there.
Sure, absolutely. Or the other link you happened to mention a few minutes ago, pandaunite.org. That will also
absolutely
take you there too, right?
Yep, and that's where you can go if you also want to take up legislation in your city or in your county. You can go to pandaunite.org and go to resources, grab the sample legislation, and then you can do what Jim County just did on Monday.
Okay. Check your Skype a little bit later, because I'm going to send you a message. I still have one more hour on this show. I'm going to do some more things, but I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to send you a couple messages, and got some things to work out with you maybe, because I can actually do a live remote up there in Kalamazoo if you would like.
Any way we can get the message out, the better.
Okay. So thanks again, Dan Johnson of People Against the NDAA.
Have a great night, guys.
Thank you very much.